outfit because directly following that session at school, I was heading to a meeting. Like most working moms, my life is a constant juggling act. Sometimes it looks like a perfectly orchestrated ballet where I'm able to flip back and forth between the kids' activities and work activities. Other times it looks like a triage unit where I'm doing everything I can to keep up with the need around me and yet still dropping the ball on priorities that feel like they're slipping away before I can get to them. At the time, I hoped that committing to extra projects for my boys would make up the difference. So I'd overwhelm an already overwrought schedule by agreeing to plan the big fundraiser for their class, or being on the board at preschool, or taking off an afternoon to cover soccer practice. I thought the extra effort would win me brownie points with my boys, but it didn't. My children were little, and their memory stretched only as far as yesterday. Even now, they don't care about today's business trip, my looming book deadline, or the staff at my office who count on me to pull my weight. My kids care that their friend's mom went on the museum field trip yesterday, and I didn't because I was flying to Chicago for work. Having kids in school feels stressful to me. My three little people have totally different schedules to keep track of, and my baby girl has her own agenda. There's paperwork, both the kind that accumulates in massive piles in the first couple of weeks, and the loose-leaf permission slips and sign-up forms that I find shoved into backpacks throughout the year. Also, school lunches. I am pretty regimented about using a system to keep their lunches organized. But now that the boys are older, they want to have lunch at school, but only on specific days. So now tracking the cafeteria calendar is a part-time job, as is making their lunch cards have enough money on them to get the teriyaki chicken this Thursday. There are field trips and performances. There are bake sales and carnivals. There are drop-offs and pickups and banking days when they get out an hour early, and if Jackson, God bless him, didn't remind me about them, I'd likely forget every single one. There are so many things to remember, and I guess what ultimately stresses me out is the idea that other moms, at school or out there in the wild world, are somehow way better at keeping track of this than I am. I am one of the most organized people I have ever met. And even with all of my planning, I still am constantly forgetting things, or remembering them at midnight the night before they're due. And no matter what I do or create or volunteer for, some mythical other mom at school has done it better. Yes, Mommy, you can buy the t-shirt we need for Make Your Own T-Shirt Day, but Liam's mom grew organic cotton plants. Then she hand-separated the seed from the fiber before spinning it into thread and fabric for the shirt she sewed him herself. I can't even begin to keep up, and the stress of trying to do so can make me crazy. So this year, I made a big decision. I'm over it. I am utterly over the idea of crushing back-to-school time, or any other part of school for that matter. I do some parts of it well. Our morning routine might be choreographed chaos, but we are never late to school. My kids, with the exception of the 4-year-old, are well-groomed and well-mannered, and they get good grades. Beyond that, they are good people, the kind of kids who befriend the outcasts and the loners. Sure, they attack each other at home and are dramatic enough about their lack of access to technology to earn themselves Oscars, but whatever. We are doing pretty good. And pretty good is way better than trying to fake perfection any day of the week. So, I might not volunteer in the classroom this year, though count me in for store-bought goodies at the class party. And I might not make it to every field trip, because even if it means I'm the jerk of all jerks, I hate chaperoning field trips. Also, gird your loins. A babysitter will likely pick my boys up from school more than I will. I wish our town would extend grace for this. Perhaps the same level of grace extended to working fathers who aren't able to make pickup either. Mom, you should parent in whatever way works for your family and spend less time worrying about other people's perception of how you're doing. Can we stop being so hard on ourselves and instead focus on the good work we are doing, the results of which are evident in the awesome little people we're raising? What if we all went into the next school year with the simple intention of just gracefully doing our best? meaning, let's try our darndest to turn in every slip on time and remember every Wacky Hair Wednesday, all the while knowing that we'll inevitably forget something, be too busy to volunteer, or fail to compete with Liam's mom and her non-GMO custom gingerbread kits for every member of the class. Can we agree that imperfection is okay? Liam's mom is awesome at her thing. But you and me, we're awesome at ours. We can walk into the school year and remember that we're raising our children into the adults they will become. Our valiant endeavor will take us a lifetime of effort. A single day, or even a handful of days, when you aren't mom of the century, won't make or break your kids. It's the intention to do well that will see them through. It's the lessons in grace and self-care and realistic expectations where you teach them about what you're capable of that will truly serve them later on. Choose a handful of things that you rock as a school mom, then knock those out of the park as often as you can. The other stuff? Give yourself permission to do the best you can and the grace to be peaceful on the days when you miss the mark. My children's attitudes will shift and grow over time. I believe that the very thing that makes me so different now, the company I run, is one of the things that will make me cool when they're older. I hope I'm creating something they'll be proud of. I hope I'm showing them the power of following their dreams and the value of entrepreneurship. I hope so many things for the future. But often, those don't help me with today. Today, I'm on yet another business trip, my third in as many weeks. Today, Jackson is nervous about rehearsing his lines to audition for the class musical, and it's hard to accept because I'm good at musical theater, but not there to help him. Today, Ford has a cough and a fever, and he's been clingy and fighting us on bedtime. But I won't be there to help Dave manage him this evening around 8 o'clock when he decides he's meant to stay up all night like a club promoter from the 80s. There's always something. Something that can overwhelm me and make me question whether or not I'm doing any of this correctly. That anxiety I felt when they were first born didn't exactly go away. It manifested and grew like a yeast starter. The only difference between now and then is that I'm better able to see that narrative for the lie that it is. Being a perfect mom is a myth, but being a pretty great mom most of the time is actually possible. I don't believe in one best way to parent. In fact, I think it could be pretty damaging to our children if we tried to impose the ideals of someone else onto how our family should function. The Hollis boys are sarcastic. They get that from their parents. Dave and I think it's hilarious, and we admire their quick wit. But in your house, their sarcasm might be seen as disrespectful. Likewise, I am incredibly strict with manners. I want yes ma'ams and no sirs. I demand pleases and thank yous. And if someone says something inappropriate or rude at my dinner table, they will be asked to leave. But maybe in your house that seems over the top. Maybe at your table you burp the alphabet after every meal and then laugh like maniacs together. If so, awesome. Mama, there is no one way to be a mother. There's also no one way to be a family. Remember when I was talking to the new moms about the daily requirements? Keep the baby alive and keep yourself alive as well? Well, the list for older children might be extended, but the intention is still the same. You need to care, truly care, that you are raising your babies to grow up to be good people. You need to do the work today to ensure that it happens. On some days, you will knock it out of the ballpark. And on other days, you will scream the house down, wondering who replaced your children with changelings who have horrible manners and no respect. Good news. Tomorrow is a new day. Tomorrow, you'll count to 10 before you lose your temper, and maybe they'll eat every bite of the dinner you made and say something so hilarious you'll think, man, people without kids are totally missing out. You will experience every kind of day as a mama, and you will need to accept the grab bag of good, bad, ugly, awesome, magical, and miserable days as a parent. You don't have to get it right all the time. You don't have to do things like anybody else's mom. You only have to care. not only about them, but also about yourself. You cannot properly take care of your children or teach them how to be whole and happy people if you are miserable and harsh with yourself. That means doing the absolute best with them that you can. That means calling in reinforcements in the form of friends, your spouse, your mama, or the playland at your local gym when you're fraying at the edges and need a break. That means giving yourself time alone and away from the precious cherubs who are driving you crazy. Get a manicure, go for a run, call up your college roommate for dinner. Better yet, plan a whole weekend if you can. Imagine 2 full days without once wiping anyone's nose. Imagine being called by your actual first name. Can you imagine sleeping in? Oh my gosh, girl, you are going to sleep so hard. Or maybe you'll get a massage. Or maybe you'll hole up somewhere all day watching Drew Barrymore movies on TBS. The world is your oyster. Then imagine coming home feeling uplifted and renewed, feeling better able to manage the squeals and screams and requests to have the crust cut off without wanting to lock yourself in the closet. Imagine living your motherhood out from now until forever without guilt. Imagine caring for your children and yourself simultaneously without constantly questioning every decision you make. It's possible. It's also a choice. You have to choose not to compare. Don't compare your family to other families or yourself to other women or moms at school. You have to choose not to compare your children either. Not to your friends' kids and most definitely not to each other. I am not saying that you shouldn't strive to improve yourself as a parent. And when it comes to your kids, your job is to help them become their best selves. But sister, please, please, please stop allowing your fear of getting it wrong to color every beautiful thing you're doing right. Years ago, I had to make a choice. Either I had to embrace being a working mom and be wholly proud of what I was doing, or I had to quit and commit to being a stay-at-home mom. Constantly castigating myself for my choices wasn't fair to my children, and it definitely wasn't fair to me. I also wasn't setting a great example for them. Did I really want them to see me spending my life pursuing a dream while also anxiously acting as though I didn't deserve the right? Absolutely not. A couple of years ago, when I was trying to lose the baby weight after my second son, I went to visit my trainer. She was a battle axe of a woman with a fondness for burpees, clearly in league with the devil. And more than once, I puked after I spent time with her. Jerk. One day we were talking about my diet. At the time, I was still going through a bad breakup with Carl's Jr. And she asked me, "Would you ever feed your child the food you feed yourself?" At the time, I had a habit of going half a day without eating, then binging on anything and everything in sight. I was horrified by the question because I put so much time and energy into what my boys ate. No, of course I wouldn't ever feed my children the way I feed myself. Later, a version of this question became the lifeline I used to pull myself back from the brink of debilitating mom guilt. Would I ever want my children to feel this way? Would I ever want them to pursue the desire of their heart, the profession that lights their soul on fire, be it a stay-at-home parent or a cosmonaut or an entrepreneur, but then constantly second-guess every choice they made because it doesn't look like anyone else's social media feed? Oh my gosh, you guys, the very idea makes my heart want to stop. I would never want them to struggle with their worth as I have. I would never want them to question themselves to the point of anxiety. I would never want them to think their entire parenting career could be summarily dismissed over Cheerios on a random school morning. So I made a decision. I will do my best. And I will trust that my best is exactly what God intended for these babies. So I choose my battles. I do the best I can with the time I have, and I bend and stretch for the stuff that seems particularly important, even if it only makes sense in the mind of a 7-year-old. One season, Sawyer announced that he only liked my sandwiches for lunch, not Daddy's. I started getting up early each day to make sure I was the only one who ever made their lunch. When Jackson told me he wanted to start running with me, I bought him shoes and went on the slowest mile-long jog the world has ever known. And when he told me I should get a necklace like the other moms, I got one. I got that necklace, but there are still 100 reasons why I don't fit into all of this as neatly as other women do. For example, I hate organized sports. Being a sports mom is sort of a badge of honor, right? Your kids get into soccer or baseball or hockey or gymnastics or whatever, and you jump right in along with them. All over Facebook and social media are pictures of mamas joyfully cheering from the sidelines. My girlfriend Kate recently told me she nearly lost her voice cheering at her son's game because she was so excited to be there. I love Kate for that. She is so quintessentially that sports mom who's in for every single part of it. But I am not. I love my kids more than anything on this planet. But sports? Meh. Sports aren't really my thing. For several years, I beat myself up because I dreaded having our Saturdays disrupted by a game schedule. I felt like a crappy mom because I should want to be out there watching my son play soccer or baseball, but I really didn't. Oh, sure. On the outside, I cheered and yelled and made the special game day snacks. But on the inside, and I know I will get flack for this admission, I thought, and still think, it's kind of boring. My husband, he could not be more thrilled to be there. He loves sports of any kind, and I suspect watching his sons play them might be on his list of top three favorite things on this planet. But I don't get it. I mean, I'm happy the boys are happy. I'm thrilled that they're involved in a team sport, learning the benefits of physical activity and gaining confidence in themselves. Beyond that, it's just not my favorite thing. And I know there are those of you who don't understand this perspective. For you, these kind of activities make your heart sing. For you, these kind of moments are exactly what you imagine when you dreamed of being a mom. And I think it's so rad that you feel that way. It's awesome that we each get to experience moments of blissed out mama pride with our babies, but what evokes that is different for every one of us. If time has taught me anything, it's that our differences are what make this life unique. None of us are exactly like the other. And this is a good thing because there's no right way to be. The room mom, the working mother, the woman without children, the retired grandma, the mom who co-sleeps, the mama who bottle-fed her baby, the strict mom, the hipster mom, the one who lets her kids go shoeless, or the one who enrolls her baby in music enrichment classes at birth. Whoever, whatever you are, you're adding spice and texture and nuance into this big, beautiful soup of modern-day parenting. I can look at other mamas and learn from them. I can also leave the things that don't strike me as authentic or practical for our family. You can do the same for your own. That is the beauty of growing and learning and figuring out exactly who you are. Things that helped me. Number one, I looked at the evidence. I used to spend so much time obsessing over all the things I was doing wrong as a mom. But you know what? My kids are awesome. Oh, sure, they drive me bonkers at times, but they get great grades and are kind and welcoming to everyone they meet. I'm the one they come to when they're hurt. I'm the one they call out for in the night if they have a bad dream. Our bond is strong and unbreakable, which doesn't change simply because I'm a working mother. Look at the evidence in your own life. If you're raising arsonists who are rude to their grandma, well, maybe you need to seek out some help. But if your kids are basically good most of the time, then cut yourself some slack. Number two, I made friends with the other moms. Yes, the ones your kids are comparing you to. Yes, the ones you're comparing yourself to. If they're at all human, then chances are they can tell you that they're also worried about screwing up their kids. Yes, Samantha's mom, who sewed 100 sequins onto 100 buttons onto the hat she made by hand, all to celebrate the 100th day of school? Yep, she's worried about her parenting too. The emperor has no clothes, y'all, and unless you seek out the truth, you're never going to know it. Number 3, I focused on quality. When I'm stressing about parenting, it's usually because I feel like I'm lacking for quality time with my kids. Quality time means I'm not on the phone or near a computer or talking to another adult. Usually it looks like reading, playing Candyland, going on movie dates, or cooking with them. When I focus my energy on them, that's when I really feel content that I'm doing a good job. Chapter 10. The Lie? I should be further along by now. Last week, I sat around with a group of women enjoying a glass of wine and a chat. The women around me were all ages, came from different cities, and had various backgrounds. Some had families, some didn't, but all of them were what I would describe as successful. The topic of age came up, and whether or not we'd like to celebrate our birthdays and the passing of another year. The general consensus was, definitely not. This threw me for a loop. I'm one of those people who loves their own birthday. I plan it months in advance and make long lists of things I want to do, wear sweatpants all day, or what I want to eat, spinach artichoke dip with funfetti cake for dessert. I look forward to it with the same childlike glee I did as a third grader. It's not just the actual celebration I like either. I wear each passing year with pride, and I truly don't care what age I am one way or the other. I know that women don't like growing older. That cliche has been around for as long as we've recorded history, I'm sure. But I had never really asked anyone why they felt that way. So I asked this group of ladies. I wanted to know what they disliked so much about growing older. The answer, at its core, was the same for every single person. I expected some reference to looking older or even feeling older physically. I'd always assumed it had to do with lost youth, and maybe for certain people that's true, but this group's issue with passing time wasn't about what was happening. They disliked growing older because of what wasn't happening. You see, they'd all made plans. As little girls or adolescents or women in their early 20s, they'd made all sorts of them. Little plans and big plans and grandiose shoot-for-the-moon plans that they assumed would have been accomplished long before now. And while they had checked many things off their list, there were still those nagging few, the hanging chads of wishes and dreams, that still hadn't come to fruition. So for them, birthdays served as a reminder of all the things they hadn't achieved. For some, they fell short of a career or financial goal. Others wanted to be married or having children. They had set themselves on some sort of course long ago, and each year they didn't reach that preconceived destination was a harsh reminder of the promises they were breaking to themselves. Who hasn't fallen for this lie? I can't count the number of times in my life when I've beaten myself up because I thought my goals had expiration dates. As a side note, what a downer attitude about a day that is supposed to be filled with buttercream icing. But ladies, we need to recognize that this mentality doesn't do any of us any good. We're focusing all of our attention on the absence of something. Imagine a little baby taking her first step. She's joyful and chubby, and she's been balancing in place without holding onto the coffee table for weeks now. Finally, finally, she takes her first cultish stumble from the relative safety of the side table, then wobbles across the perils of the living room rug to grasp the edge of the sofa. She gets there and looks up at you with elation and pride and so much excitement. Now imagine you give her a quick, brittle smile and demand, "Yes, Chloe, that's fine, but why aren't you running by now?" Can you imagine the dismay that baby girl would feel? What kind of parent has that kind of reaction to a child who's just learning to do something new, It would be unheard of for a mother to react so harshly, to judge a baby on what she hasn't yet had the time or life experience to figure out. And yet we do it to ourselves all the time. Our own negative self-talk can be more damaging than the emotional abuse heaped on us by a hateful parent. It's also far more insidious because there's nobody there to stop it, since we rarely even realize it's happening. Beating ourselves up about all the things we think we're doing wrong becomes a litany of white noise. Eventually, we don't even hear it anymore. And for what? Because you thought you'd be partner at your firm by 40? Because you can't believe how much weight you've gained since having kids? Because your sister is already married and you're not even dating anyone? Because you dropped out of college and didn't get your degree? And you're thinking with every passing hour and day and week that it's too late? I call bullcrap. God has perfect timing. If you aren't of a similar faith, think of it as everything happening exactly when it's supposed to. You look at your life and the 8 things you thought you'd have accomplished by 35 and feel depressed. But maybe it's just that you don't have enough life experience yet. You're like that baby who's balancing in the middle of the room on chubby baby thighs. Maybe you have to get your bearings for a while longer. Or maybe the goal wasn't ever meant to be yours. Maybe you are destined for something so much cooler, which won't come until 5 years down the road. Maybe you have to walk through the space you're in to be ready for that. Nothing is wasted. Every single moment is preparing you for the next. But whether or not you choose to see this time as something wonderful, the time when God is stretching you and growing you, or maybe forging you in fires hotter than you think you can withstand, all of it is growing you for the person you're becoming, for the future you can't even imagine. When I decided to get pregnant for the first time, I thought I'd snap my fingers and be expecting the next minute. It took 8 months to conceive. 8 months of hoping, 8 months of crying every time I got my period, 8 months of trying not to be jealous of the women around me who were pregnant. 8 months of being sad when it didn't happen the way I thought it should. The morning I finally took a test that showed me 2 pink lines, I ran over to the mirror to look at my face. I kept thinking, I never want to forget how I looked when I found out I would be a mother. I can still see myself in that mirror, wide-eyed and filled with shock and wonder. Jackson Cage Hollis was born on January 30th, 2007. And he is one of the greatest joys in my life. He loves computer games and cooking with me and wears a stack of rainbow-colored rubber bracelets on his right wrist at all times because they're cool, Mom, that's why. Guys, if I had gotten pregnant at any point during those 8 months of trying, I wouldn't have had Jackson. God has perfect timing. I used to dream of being the biggest event planner in Los Angeles. I wanted a big staff and a fancy office and the highest paying clients in town. Year after year, I kept thinking, this is the year I'll need a staff of 20. This is the year I'll produce the governor's ball. This is the year I'll bring home $1 million. I'm a dreamer, you'll recall. And every year we grew, but not as big as I hoped. And I'd feel so depressed that I wasn't as successful as I wanted to be. Then, my little blog, which was only ever supposed to be a marketing tool for the events company, started to grow a fan base. And I absolutely loved testing out recipes for them or talking about how to decorate a living room. Eventually, the site became my full-time business, and a college dropout without any knowledge of tech or digital media found herself running a lifestyle media company with fans in the millions. Beyond that, this work is so much more fun and gratifying than the events ever were. If I'd had the biggest events company in LA with a staff and the millions, I wouldn't have had the time to write the little blog that would eventually become my career and change the trajectory of my life completely. God has perfect timing. Dave and I walked through a long adoption journey. Nearly 5 years ago, we started the process to adopt a little girl from Ethiopia. After mountains of paperwork and nearly a year of filing and preparing and getting fingerprints done for the 100th time, we were officially vetted and waiting for a match. 2 years of waiting later, the adoption program in Ethiopia imploded, and we found out that the continuing wait for a match was futile. We had to mourn the loss of the life and the daughter we had imagined for ourselves. We started over. We decided to adopt through foster care in LA County because we recognized that the need was great. During that journey, we took in two little girls through foster care, and I sobbed for weeks after they had to leave us. 2 months later, we got a call about newborn twin girls that would be ours. We brought them home from the hospital at 6 days old. We named them, and I experienced a love that can't properly be explained. Unbeknownst to us, their biological father decided he wanted them, and 5 weeks later, the babies I thought were my daughters were taken back. I wasn't sure how to think or feel, and I truly didn't know if I had it in me to try again for adoption. I knew I was letting my fear control me, that the worry about giving my heart away again, only to have it stomped on, kept me from taking a next step. In the midst of such heartache, it's hard not to worry. I cried so many tears, thinking, Lord, why would you put this desire on my heart if it wasn't ever going to come true? And God, if we try again, you're not actually sending my heart out to be slaughtered, right? Because this process with court dates and bio parents and doctor's visits and trauma and the Department of Children and Family Services, that was already hard enough. You're not going to eviscerate us at the end of this, right? Right? Amid these fearful thoughts, I heard him ask me, do you have faith in my plan or not? That is what it boils down to. Faith. The belief that your life will unfold as it was meant to, even when it unfolds into something painful and difficult to navigate. Do I believe he has a plan? Absolutely. I've seen the proof of it too many times to consider anything else. That means I have to hold on to that belief even when the process isn't simple or easy or safe. I could make a list for you all day. I could point out 100 different moments in my life when I thought I should have something and was so upset about not getting it, only to discover in retrospect that it was never meant to be mine. Looking back, I think that was the case with my daughter. The other girls were only meant to be ours for a little while. And for whatever reason, we were only meant to be theirs for a short time. We were part of each other's journey, a stop along the way to the ultimate destination, even if we won't be there to see each other reach it. As I sit editing this chapter, my daughter is asleep in a bouncy seat on the kitchen table next to my computer. Just 5 months after the twins left, 5 months after I could not imagine trying to adopt again, we were matched with her first mom through independent adoption. That season was filled with anxiety. I was so terrified of the things that could go wrong, that had gone wrong in the past, that I could hardly function. But what came out of the experience was a relationship with both Noah and her first family that is so special it could only have been crafted by the divine. And yet again, I am reminded that God has perfect timing. If you have a goal, that's fantastic. I'm one of the most motivated people you will ever meet. And my list of life goals is 9 miles long. But I've learned that along with my list of goals, I have to give myself some grace. Being married by 25, pregnant at 30, and the president of my division before I turn 40 are just arbitrary numbers. Because guess what? None of those preconceived notions or plans for myself worked out. Marriage and babies came way earlier than I thought. And career success came way later. Turns out, the most beautiful things in my life were never on my to-do list. Today, there may be items on your to-do list, but you also have a long list of things you have achieved. You've already done little things and big things. Goals you accomplished years ago that are on someone else's bucket list. Focus on what you have done. Pay attention to the tiny steps you took across the living room carpet on wobbly legs. Celebrate the small moments. They're sacred, even if they aren't stepping stones to something else. Nothing is more important than today. God has perfect timing, and it's highly possible that by not being where you thought you should be, you will end up exactly where you're meant to go. Things that helped me. Number one, making a list. Seriously, list out everything you've accomplished to date. In fact, write yourself a letter about your tenacity. I took a workshop with Elizabeth Gilbert last year, and she asked us to do this, to speak from the part of ourselves that has achieved so much, that refused to back down. You want to see a room full of people sobbing? Ask them to do this task. When you force yourself to admit to all the things you have accomplished, you'll realize that it's wrong to be so hard on yourself for all the things you haven't. Number two, talking to someone. Many times we don't admit to the way we're feeling because we're too embarrassed. But when you have someone you can talk to who will listen to you say, "I feel worthless because I'm not a rock star by now," then you can experience the balm of their validation. "Are you kidding me right now?" they'll say. "Look at all the rad things you've done. You are amazing. Stop being so hard on yourself." Remember, when you keep silent, you give those lies power. Number three, setting goals, not time limits. I love goals. They can help you become your best self, but big dreams shouldn't have expiration dates. As long as you're working toward the things you hope to accomplish, it shouldn't matter if it takes you a month or a decade. Chapter 11, The Lie. Other people's kids are so much cleaner, better organized, more polite. I've spoken at my fair share of MOPS groups over the years, and I personally believe there is a special place in heaven for anyone who has lived through the season of raising a preschooler. Like with most talks I'm asked to give, I get the question about what I'd like to speak on when it comes to parenting. Sometimes they even have a theme for me to work with, such as better together or a journey into... On these occasions, I try to work into the theme based on what I know well. A journey into the left side of the Taco Bell menu. A journey into books with a vampire and werewolf love triangle. A journey into finally learning the cha-cha slide to impress your kids just before the whip nay-nay brought you back to square one. Inevitably, I sit down and do my best to work up some thoughtful, poignant discussion based on the proposed theme. A journey into understanding the gospel, perhaps, or a journey into finding peace. But when I try to sit down and write out my thoughts, I can't organize them. Life gets in the way, kids get in the way, work, bedtime, dinner time, nap time, it all gets in the way. I find myself thinking, "Lord, how do you expect me to speak about anything if I never get a moment's peace? I'm running around here like my hair is on fire, and you're asking me to share wisdom with other women? You want me to talk about my faith? I'm so tired, I can't even spell faith." And I hear that still, small voice. That is what I want you to speak about. This is probably the impetus for most, if not all, of the things I've ever done that resonated with other women and were therefore successful. I was struggling, and rather than try and sugarcoat it or pretend it wasn't happening, I simply acknowledged my struggles in my work. So I'm not going to talk about finding your peace. I'm going to talk about embracing your chaos. Let's be honest. This is way more likely a scenario because I don't know a woman alive today who can slow down long enough to find her keys, let alone a continuous state of inner peace. If you ever happen to find your peaceful inner bliss while raising children, please don't tell the rest of us. It'll only make us sad, and I eat raw cake batter when I'm sad. I run a lifestyle media company that specializes in creating content for women. The tent pole of that company is the website, and every day a large fan base of ladies from all over the world checks in to figure out what to make for dinner, or how to DIY a throw pillow, or organize their kids for school, or which outfits they should try for fall. I'm reminding you of that so you'll remember that I literally offer women advice for a living. Every single bit of the work I do is created to help make women's lives easier. This is crucial because I'm about to share an entire chapter on running toward chaos, on walking through hard things, on accepting the season you're in, even when it sucks. A decade of doing this job has taught me something, and I have a pretty strong theory. Ironically, I think embracing chaos might be the path to finding peace. Have you ever heard of the chaos theory? Chaos theory is the field of study in mathematics that identifies the behavior and condition of dynamical systems that are highly sensitive to initial conditions, a response popularly referred to as the butterfly effect. FYI, I Googled that. I've never in my life written out a sentence with the words dynamical systems before or since this moment. The butterfly effect is a long ago term based on the idea that if you track the path of a hurricane from its inception, you'd find that it was all caused by a change in air pressure from the flap of a butterfly's wings 3 weeks prior and halfway across the world. In simple terms, it just means that small things can have monstrous effects. Chaos looks like my 3-year-old waking up at least once a night and battling to sleep in our bed. My website crashing and needing hours of repair. My brother-in-law making a trip to the hospital. My husband traveling for 10 days on business. Me getting hives or Bell's palsy or stress-induced vertigo. Me spilling an entire gallon of milk. A bird pooping in my hair, a baby pooping in my hair, me fighting with my husband, my mom, my sister, or my husband's mom's sister. Y'all can fill in the blank with your own personal brand of chaos because we all have it. Every single one of us is living in chaos, and we handle it in one of three ways. One, we ignore it. This is one of my favorite methods of chaos management. I pretend it isn't there. I keep my head down and keep working harder and harder because nobody can hit a moving target. The problem with ignoring your chaos is that chaos by nature is incredibly stressful. It's like trying to pretend you're not really sick when you clearly have the flu. You can try to mind over matter it, but ultimately, the stress always catches up to you, and your body will react in negative ways. For me, my stress has reacted with Bell's palsy or vertigo. My big sister gets hives when she's stressed out. Another friend gets insomnia. You may think it's not affecting you directly, but it will come out, and likely in ways that aren't healthy for you or your family. Number two, we battle it. Typically, we battle chaos on a completely different field from the one we really need to address. So, in response to our relationships being stressful, we might clean the kitchen. We'll clean the bedroom and the front room. We clean the kitchen again. We brush our kids' hair and wipe their faces and cry when they get ketchup on their church dress. We do everything in our power to have a picture-perfect existence, because then, maybe the inside will match the outside. The problem with a battle is that we will always lose. If we believe we can do enough, or organize enough, or plan enough to make sure that nothing is ever difficult, we will only make ourselves feel like a failure when life is too hard. Life is crazy and stressful, and sometimes it gets worse before it gets better. Losing a battle against regular everyday life makes us feel impotent and angry. It makes us feel out of control. Number three, we drown in it. We get overwhelmed by housework, regular work, family and friends. The stressful things become all we see. It feels insurmountable, and no matter what we do, it doesn't get better. We slip into wallowing. We complain. We crawl under the covers, and we let the chaos win. The problem is, drowning means suffocating. And if we choose to stay underwater without kicking our way to the surface, we eventually forget how to swim. Sister, you are stronger than this. You've got babies to raise and bills to pay and a life to live, and you can't do that if you're hiding under the covers. Also, each of these ways, avoiding, battling, and drowning, is a prime platform for the false life preserver of substance abuse. You can use food to avoid facing your life. You can get drunk as a way to drown your sorrows. You can reach for so many negative substances to take your mind away from the chaos around you, and many of us do so without realizing that we're developing a dangerous, regular coping mechanism instead of a one-time escape. The biggest problem with all three of those things, any one of them implies that you are the one in control. And to some extent, that's true. After all, the driving force behind this book is to remind you that you are in control of yourself. But you cannot control the actions of others. Your kids having a meltdown, the baby having a blowout at Target, the dog digging up your yard, or the washing machine breaking down. And when you think you can, you only find yourself angry, frustrated, and stressed. Also, when you assume you're in control, you don't stop and take time to seek out a relationship with God. You use alternative means to try and manufacture some peace. So what are our options? Ignore it? Battle it? Medicate the chaos until we feel numb to its effects? No way. We are stronger than that. Even if it's hard to feel it when you're buried under a pile of laundry and a horde of hyper children. There is another option. One people rarely cling to. Embrace the madness. Interestingly enough, the people I know who do this best are the ones whose lives are the most chaotic of all. They're my friends whose husbands are serving overseas. They're the women I know who are raising special needs children. They're the single mamas working three jobs. I believe it's because they learned a long time ago that there is beauty in the chaos, as well as freedom in not trying to fight against the tide. The thing is, Jesus was the ultimate embracer of chaos. He preached and taught and shepherded a flock, and in the midst of his tumultuous ministry, he accepted everyone. Everyone was allowed to join in on the love. The widows, the prostitutes, the lepers, the orphans, people with great need, people who brought drama and stress into his life, and folks who weren't always lovable or even kind. Furthermore, Jesus told us to love them too. He didn't ask us kindly or say, "Hey guys, maybe you could..." No, he straight up called us to stand with the oppressed. Jesus looked at them and said, "Bring it on." Jesus took in the messy, broken pieces and said, "Behold, I am making all things new." Amid our chaos, fear, and frustration, there is the reminder, to everything there is a season, and a time to every purpose under heaven. You're sitting in your house, in your neighborhood, in your city, and thinking, "This is so hard. Nobody else understands. I can't keep up, blah, blah, blah." And God is up there like, "Good and perfect daughter, I have been talking about this since Jump Street." Being overwhelmed isn't a new concept. Having a tough day or week? Do you snap at your husband or want to pull out your hair? You haven't cornered the market on that. You are not the only one. The way you deal with stress, though, is where your individuality comes through. So maybe you're reading this and you're thinking, "Okay, I'm in. I get it. Let's embrace this chaotic life. But how in the heck do I do that?" Start by giving yourself some grace. We all mess up. We all make mistakes. We all forget pajama day or mix it up with picture day. I've screamed at my kids, my husband, and myself. None of it feels good. All of it devastates me because the loss of control is so upsetting. But you know what? Tomorrow is another day and a chance to try again. Take a breath. Find humor in the situation and force yourself to look for it when it's not immediately evident. A couple of years ago, when we were getting certified to be foster parents, a social worker had to interview each of our kids. We sat in the living room with them while she asked innocuous questions over iced tea. She gave them harmless prompts. Harmless until she spoke to a barely 4-year-old Ford Hollis. "What makes you happy?" she asked. He said he liked to go swimming. "And what makes you sad?" she followed up. Without hesitation, he told her, "When Daddy scares me in the night." Both Dave and I froze like deer in headlights. What? What the heck was he talking about? And why was he choosing right now with a social worker from Child Protective Services to work through this? "What do you mean when Daddy scares you in the night?" "You know, when he comes into my room in the night and he's mad at me." Y'all, when you do an interview like this, you're already on edge. But when your kids say something crazy, you think that not only are you not going to get approved for foster care, but also you might lose the children you do have. More questions revealed that Ford was talking about the night before when he'd woken up in the middle of the night and tried to sneak in bed with us, which is against the rules. Daddy was grouchy when he had to walk him back to bed 3 times at 2 o'clock in the morning. It's hilarious in hindsight, but at the time, before we'd gotten clarification, I thought I was going to hyperventilate. So push yourself to laugh at hard situations. In fact, the crazier the situation, the more humor you should be able to mine from it. I also encourage myself and you to look for the fruits of the Spirit. For those of you who didn't grow up singing them on a kids' worship music tape before breakfast each morning like I did, the fruits of the Spirit are love, joy, patience, peace, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. All of these are incredible values, but I believe there's always one that we need the most in a particular season. Choose the one that resonates with you at this moment, write it down on some post-its, and stick them everywhere. Don't forget to take a break. Take care of yourself. Go on a date or get your nails done. Take some time just for you to refill your cup, and you'll be better able to embrace all the badness when you step back inside of it. Find a tribe of people who are in a similar walk of life as you are. Once you find them, be honest about where you're at and what you're struggling with. Learn to ask for help. And when someone offers help, accept it. Accept any and all help you can get and consider it a gift from God. I cannot tell you how many women ask me how I do it all, and when I tell them that I've learned to ask for help, they look at me as if I'm an alien. Like, help with what? For example, when your mother-in-law says she'll come for the afternoon and entertain the kids, say, "Yes, please." If your husband offers to fold the laundry, even when you don't think he's good at folding towels, say, "Yes, please." If your girlfriend says she wants to bring you dinner or wine, but you feel badly that you're putting her out, say, "Yes, please." Or if your elementary school offers afternoon classes that will occupy your rambunctious boys for an additional hour and a half, say, "Yes, please." What can give you more time, more space, more freedom to find your center? Whatever it is, say yes, please to that. Remember that old joke about how a man keeps praying for God to save him from drowning? Someone comes by in a boat and asks him if he needs a ride, and he's like, "Nah, God will save me." When it happens 2 more times, he says the same thing both times. Spoiler alert, the man ends up drowning. And when he gets to heaven, he's like, "God, what the heck? I asked you to save me." And God looks at him and says, "Dude, I sent you 3 different life rafts and you ignored each one." Girlfriend, God is sending you all kinds of life rafts. Some are big and obvious, and some are as simple as the bagger at the store offering to load your groceries into your car. Get in the freaking boat. Remember Philippians 1:6? Being confident of this, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion. Oh man, I just love that scripture. I believe it's true, and I've watched it unfold in my life again and again. You will get through this season. This too shall pass. Don't set the rest of your life up on a downhill slope because of one hard season. It also might be helpful to remember that someone else is praying to have the kind of chaos you're currently crying about. What I mean is, the things you think are so difficult could be someone else's dream come true. I don't say that to make you feel badly or to negate your difficult experience, but perspective may help you see that your chaos is actually just a gigantic blessing. Adjusting your view can work wonders. Lastly, remember the butterfly effect? Well, let's consider an actual butterfly, or more specifically, a caterpillar. Caterpillars are awesome. They have all those legs, and they're really cool, and there's an entire children's book series about how pretty they are. But if the caterpillar just chose to stay a caterpillar, if she decided that the chaos of metamorphosis would be too much for her to handle, she would never know what she could become. Do you think that changing her entire being isn't painful? Do you think it's not scary and hard and overwhelming? Of course it is. But if she didn't fight against the fear, if she didn't allow the change to turn her into her true self, we would never know how beautiful she is. She would never know that she was meant to fly. Things that helped me. Number one, friends like me. Meaning, friends who were newly married when I was newly married. Friends who are entrepreneurs because I'm an entrepreneur. Friends who are working moms or boy moms or have kids at similar ages, they're all lifesavers. Having someone you can grab a glass of wine with who can totally relate to your day is a gift. Such friends are vital in helping me feel encouraged. Number two, priorities. You can keep a clean house or start a company or stay at home with a baby or build a slammin' bod from working out 7 days a week, but I don't think you can have all of those at the same time, or at least not in the same increments. Sit down and decide what's really important to you. Not what's important to your mother-in-law or your girlfriends. Decide what's really important to you. Then do those things first. If the house is cluttered or you need to wait until next year to train for the half marathon, well, that's just life. Number three, boxed wine. Okay, I'm kidding. Well, slightly kidding. I do think you should have something that helps you unwind. Running or watching HGTV or baking might be the thing for you. No matter what, find something in your life that feels like a treat or an indulgence. When you're feeling extra frazzled, you should be able to go to your happy place and reset. Chapter 12. The Lie. I need to make myself smaller. I went to a conference last year, the kind of thing where a life guru stands on stage and walks you through guided meditation or yells at you to believe in yourself. I loved every single second of it. As I constantly analyze how I can grow and become a better version of myself, I appreciate wisdom wherever I can get it. No one person can be your source for all the answers, but you can glean a handful of powerful thoughts here and a dash of insight there. I hope you get some great tangible advice from me, but I don't for one moment believe that you're going to take every single thing in these pages as gospel. So, I read the books and listen to the podcast, and when someone I admire fills an arena nearby for a few days of wisdom, you better believe I'm buying a ticket. It was during an experience like this that I had a powerful insight into something about myself I never expected. Which parent did you crave love from more? The speaker asked the crowd. Not which parent did you love more, which one did you crave love from more? My dad. I would assume that this is true for